Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hey everybody, I'm Larry Port with the Dream Job Cafe, and I have with me today Elliot Edelman. And Elliot is an independent trader. Hey, Elliot, thanks for being with us.
Sure, Larry. Thank you so much for having me.
So Elliot and I go back, like, I think we were like, we were involved with the same Little League team. So if that tells you anything about his life balance, but before we even get there, Elliot, why don't you tell me what it is you do exactly?
Okay. I'm an independent stock trader, stocks, options, sometimes futures. I was a professional trader for 30 years. I worked in a hedge fund briefly. Then I worked in two different prop firms, which is called the proprietary trading firms, where traders generally, you put up money and they give you a lot of leverage and they have the back office and you know, sometimes training. And in the early days, they had an exact link to the exchanges. But now in current times with the internet, you know, you can trade from home. So I left that recently because, you know, as I said, I don't need the office anymore. I trade from home. I've actually faster internet than what the firm had. I don't need their leverage as much. And, you know, also I don't want all the compliance issues. I want to start. I like to put out content and so on. And, you know, you have to watch what you say when you're working for a firm. So generally, gotcha. I'm an experienced trader, traded all kinds of strategies and different things.
So that's gotcha. What I do. So you're a trader and you're trading stuff that most people know about, stocks. You're also doing some options and futures. Before we get into that a little bit, can you talk about like what your day is like? Because as an independent working from home, like, do you have a lot of flexibility? I would think you would.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm not as intense as I used to be. 5 or 10 years ago, I wouldn't be having this podcast with you during the day. I would say, Larry, can we do it at 4:30?
Right.
And in the day, we'll call it in the day. I never went out to lunch. All right. So there's a big trade-off, but I didn't work weekends. I didn't work nights. You know, sometimes I would do some research, but that wasn't like I had to stay till 9. Like if, you know, we coached Little League together, there was a game at 5:30, no problem being there. The next night, maybe there wasn't. So I did a little research. But so every day I'm from stock market is 9:30 to 4, and obviously get there to prep like an hour or so before that. I'm here and had even a doctor's appointment. I would try to make it, you know, after 4 or things like that. And that's it. But I think it was a good trade-off because especially when I work from home, no commute, no long hours, no weekends, no nights. But after years and years, it says, wow, I wonder what it's like to be just walking around on a Wednesday afternoon in the town, you know? So
it's a lot of people, you know, walking around, right? There's a lot of people walking around on a Wednesday afternoon. It's like always shocking to me.
Well, they're either retired or unemployed or what have you.
Right. So talk a little bit about this. Like, how did you end up doing what you're doing? Did you always know you wanted to go into finance, or was this something that you stumbled into, or how did this play out?
Okay. I definitely, from an early age, I don't know, maybe middle school, I always was fascinated with the stock market.
Oh, wow.
I mean, my parents were not involved in it at all, but my dad would bring home, I lived in New York. He'd come home on the subway and he'd bring the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. And I would open up to, you know, the business section with the, you know, rows and columns of numbers. And to me, that fascinated me. And I see this thing is up 20%, 40%, and people made money. And it was like, you know, some people look at the horse racing charts or something. It was fascinating. And I always liked that type of thing. I even was ahead of my time, like sports. I would create my own like fantasy leagues and bet and whatever just for fun. And, you know, I always liked that type of probability. Ironically, I don't do that now. I don't sports bet, or I'm one of the few traders that doesn't really play poker. But it's very good to know the odds and probability. Anyway, so it was like the stock market. In high school, I had an internship at a brokerage firm, but that's mostly like a sales position, and college also. But I was a computer science and math major.
You were?
All right. Yeah, that was a hot field in the day. But you could see in looking back, I took courses like economics and stuff that wasn't required, but I had an interest in it. And then later on, I was working in programming in the banking industry, and you know, the love of the stock market was like always was in the back of my mind. And I went back to school for an MBA in finance, which I went part-time. And actually, it's funny, I took so many courses in college that, like I said, economics, and I took accounting, which was optional. And of course, all the computer and math and statistics, I was waived down to the minimum. So it really didn't take me that long to get the MBA. And I got my break, which I should take a step back. And this is something for a lot of your viewers. So I went to a lot of headhunters in Manhattan, or I applied. This was before the internet by then it was 90s.
Sure.
I thought, I'm experienced already. I was programming, you know, maybe I would get in like through programming, trading strategies. I know you ended up doing stuff like that. And, you know, you want to go work for Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley or one of those big firms. They rather get somebody right out of school, preferably from a, you know, Ivy League. And so in talking to the headhunter, it's almost like at 27, I was washed up. So,
oh boy,
it's like there's a career ladder. And unless you get on the first or second rung of that ladder, it's very hard to get onto that ladder, it seems, you know, especially in corporate, like, you know, I guess top law firm or
investment bank, top dope broker dealer.
Investment bank. But luckily I got my break. There was a small hedge fund. I guess my headhunter had a little bit of in, and they see that I was good in programming. I had an MBA in finance. I interviewed with them. It was almost like, I remember the movie Slumdog Millionaire? Every question he answered, every question he asked, I knew. What's the yield on a bond? What's current yield? What's call option? What's this? What's that? You know, I don't remember the exact questions. You know, I did well, and I got the job. I helped programming a trading strategy. They, you know, registered me. I took the Series 7 exam. And lo and behold, soon after, I'm backing up the trader I was working with when he would take a day off. I'm all of a sudden responsible for a, you know, big trading portfolio. You know, and we still did programming strategies. I learned a lot of more analytical way, not just, you know, speculation. And that was great. Unfortunately, the hedge fund pretty much went under.
Oh boy.
And I was out of a job. So I ended up in a prop firm, which you put up money and they give you leverage. Somebody introduced me to the person and they had an idea for me to work on. And that's where I've been since. And I never really, you know, I don't have any regrets, but I never really looked to jump back into the, you know, corporate rather than trading on my own. And, you know, then soon after I moved to Florida, and Florida is not as much opportunity. Although now all of a sudden, a lot of big firms are moving to Miami and Palm Beach.
Right. After COVID, especially, that started accelerating.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a little ahead of my time, but you know, at this point, that's not the case. So yeah. So I was lucky that I got into the industry, but in a prop firm, sometimes I'll take people without any background. If they're going to put up the money, you know, and they have to get licensed, then, you know, they're good to go. So it is a great opportunity for some who can't make it any other way. But, you know, more in New York, there was people who were experienced. They were in mutual funds. They worked on the floor. Whereas in Florida, the day traders were just guys that, you know, just wanted to, you know, try to, you know, make it.
So let me ask you about what you were saying before, like breaking into the industry. I didn't realize it was like one of these industries you really had to break into so much. I guess, yes, at the big prestigious Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, perhaps. But I never thought it was like, you know, like the entertainment business, which is like so hard to enter. So can you talk a little bit about that and maybe the different paths that are available?
Yeah, well, when I was into programming, and I should say that besides my interest in the stock market, it got to a point where I saw people around me, like this one particular guy, and I know this is not offensive to you. I'll call him real computer nerd.
I understand.
And you can call somebody a nerd and everything. Elon Musk is a nerd. I'll take a thousandth of his money, right? And I saw this guy was so thrilled to, when a new operating system came out, to get home and study it all night and all weekend and go on courses and this and that. And I says, you know what? I don't have that. I did my stuff. I did pretty good, but I didn't love it. And I think it would be great if you could be in a field where you love it. That
right.
Whatever something new comes out, you'll do and study and you know, be up all night. So I says, how far am I going to go as a programmer, you know, versus, you know, plus you have this other love, you know, so it's one of the reasons I left. But anyway, getting back to your main question, you know, the big firms are very choosy. they'll take only the top, from Ivy Leagues and, almost 1600 SAT. And I hear the interview processes are multi-steps, very hard. They'll ask you all kinds of complicated questions. But I hear of some people not from a top school that do make it in, maybe had some connections. I did have some interviews when I was a programmer, Kidder Peabody. I remember I had a few that wasn't around anymore. Lehman Brothers, different. Somehow I was interviewed by companies that are no longer. But anyway, maybe if they would have taken me, they would have still been around.
Yeah, exactly.
But, so then anyway, you end up going off on your own and you can get addicted to the autonomy. That's the right word. You don't really have a boss over you unless like you're losing a lot of your capital and, hey, what's happening? So I have a friend who's in a flooring business, very good business. One day he calls me, my customers are complaining. My employees are complaining. My suppliers are complaining. My landlord ends up complaining. In trading, you're just fighting with the stock market, which is a tough competitor, but at least you could just focus on that. If you can do good and you can easily, leverage it. If you can make money on 100 shares and you can do 500 shares, 1,000, 10,000, whereas anything else, if you're a dentist and you're doing good, there's only so many hours in a day or so many patients you could take on. You would have to either hire dentists under you or something like that. There's only a maximum to how much you could make, But still, if I look back, I guess one regret I might have is even though in the hedge fund and in the prop firm, they can give you leverage. So you're trading hundreds of thousands or millions, a few million dollars, it might sound impressive, but the big boys who go in the big firms or have a hedge fund, they're trading hundreds of millions or, $1 billion. All right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's easy. It's maybe a team of people and you're getting a smaller payout, but multiplied by that much more money. That's how they make, the big figures. I had a number of very big years, but I said, wow, I wish that was on, much more money. So, that's an issue when you're on your own. There's only so much you can do. And it's right. Also your own money. So if you lose, that's your own money. The guys working at a firm, I think if they blow out, what happens? Worse, they lose their job. They don't get a bonus. They're not like losing,
losing your retirement fund. Sure.
Yes, yes.
Well, so then that, I spoke with my friend Patrick, who's a bond trader on this podcast earlier, and he said that I asked him, who should go into this kind of work and who should not go into this kind of work? And the one thing that he said is, if you can't tolerate risk, don't come into this line of work. In your opinion, who makes a good trader, especially if they wanted to go this independent route?
Yes. And it's funny. It's always been a debate. There's been books about it. Can you train person to be a trader or not? And some say yes, some say no. I think you have to be very good, mathematically. When I say mathematical, you don't have to know calculus 3, unless you're the quant in the background. You got to be familiar with probability. That's why even I said, playing poker or blackjack, you got to know risk and reward, especially in options. And you got to be able to, as that other gentleman said, you got to be able to brush off losses and don't get too high on wins, And also a little separate issue, especially if you're trading on your own, you got to, watch your lifestyle creep. You can't, you have a big year, spend all of that money because then the next year might be, might be negative. All right. So you have to, put away your eggs for, put away your eggs for a rainy day. You may not make it every month, certainly, and, maybe not even every year. So you have to be able to balance that out. It's got to be able to take pressure and stress, but you got to be very disciplined, stick to your strategy. And a lot of people, and I've done it too in the past, in my early years especially, you let your guard down, you'll say, don't hold a losing position overnight, but this is going to come back tomorrow. So you do it. Now it goes down. It's going to come back. So I'm going to buy even more. And the last number of years, a lot of amateur traders have been buying on the dip and it's been working. But sometime, I was around in the dot-com bubble, 1998, 1999, a lot of people, they didn't really know what they're doing, but they made money. You would just buy the popular stocks.
Right.
Go up, you sell it. If it goes down, wait, it would probably come back. And again, you sell it, you make money. But then when 2000 hit and they went down, well, it'll come back. It goes down. Oh, now it rallies one day. Okay, it'll be back. Now let me buy more. Then it goes down more and more. So many people wiped out what they made in a couple of years.
I think Cisco just got back to where it was. I think
I wrote something about that. Yeah, it's funny. I guess they've had dividends in between, but imagine that. It took 20 years to make it back, but at least they were around. There's a lot of companies that are not around. You remember, what was it? Pets.com or something? And
there's a lot. It was gazoonhite.com. There was a lot of those.
But anyway, in trading, I was going to say, I was a little ahead of my time with work from home because you worked over the computer. A lot of industries, you can't. If you work on the floor of the exchange, you can't work from home. You know, if you work in a big firm. And now most people, a lot of young people are trading over the phone, you know, Robinhood or whatever, Fidelity, Schwab, you know, but the cliche was you take your laptop on the beach. But when I was trading heavy, especially, I have 8 monitors. So I don't think I could take 8 monitors to the beach. That would really cause a scene.
Yeah, well, taking your work to the beach is a different conversation. But let me ask you this. Like, so you mentioned people trading, like young people trading on their phones or using Robinhood. How is what you do as an independent trader? Now, I know you do options and futures. How is that different than what some of these, you know, people that are dabbling in doing? Is it a bigger scale? Is it more sophisticated? Is it all of the above? Like, can you talk to that?
Yes, I would say all of the above. First of all, over the years, I've done a lot of what's called like market neutral strategies, which means, you know, I'm neutral whether the market goes up or down because I have longs and I have shorts. You say, well, then how can you make money? Well, hopefully the longs go up more than the shorts lose if it's going up the market. And if the market crashes, hopefully your longs don't go down as much, but your shorts go down more. And, you know, sometimes they're spread. So actually, I've done my best when the market is going crazy volatile because things are going all around and you're, you know, not that I can predict what's going to happen, but when things go out of whack, you know, you think this one got too far, so you sell that one. This one went down, you buy this one and you twirl. So if a crash happens, I'm not so hurt by it because, you know, I'm making it. And a lot of younger people, like going back to like the .com, they're all long, you know, and leverage stuff. So, you know, it's more sophisticated. Of course, at a higher scale, you know, I'm trading, you know, $1 million plus accounts. You know, they're probably 10,000, 20,000 or what have you, you know.
Right.
So, and, you know, I also have to hedge because I can't afford, you know, I don't want to have a big loss, you know, so that's where some options come in. But having said that, I'm amazed that young people, some of them, they take these swings of 10,000 plus or minus. Even when I was trading a huge portfolio and I, you know, like I said, I was hedged, I would hate to lose more than a couple $1,000 in a day. You know, it happened once in a while, 10,000 or more, but you know, I was consistent making most days and they're taking these swings and I don't know what their net worth is. It's almost like they're wiping out half of their thing. Well, it'll come back, but they do it and they're in 2 or 3 stocks only. So,
right. Like, so they're not doing the multi-layered kind of things, mixing different like products and so on and so forth. So that stuff is, if you have the mind for stocks to begin with, that stuff I found when I was programming for the market, I found all that stuff very, very fascinating. How about this one? I like the ability that, like, in my line of work, I don't have to see what's going on in the news. And now I know in the stock market, like, a lot depends on what's going on in the world. Like, can you tune out or do you have to be like glued to what's happening in the world?
Okay, that's a good question. A lot of, by the way, some people might say I'm a day trader and I'm not a day trader, or I've done some trades that are a day trade. Day trader is somebody that's just like speculating just in and out that day. They're just like on a quick momentum. They're looking usually charts like this is going up. They buy it and hopefully go and it starts to turn down. They get out, you know, a lot of trades in, out, in, and hopefully they're right more than not and they can make a living. It's very difficult because each time you make a trade, you're paying a spread. In the old days, you pay a commission. But those people, they're not, you know, it's not like you want to use the word sophisticated, you know, more a swing trading, a longer term strategy.
I mean, the 8 monitors, right? That made me think, like, I know there's
The news you asked me. Yeah.
Yeah. So, people are always trying to, you're paying attention. You have to know what's going on in Argentina, how it's going to affect this and that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's, you know, one person or team can't be like a global, you know, hedge fund where you're looking at foreign exchange and commodities and everything, you know, just maybe monitor the 20 stocks you're trading. When I was trading preferred stocks for a while, probably not going to hear too many people do that. And, you know, I had a Bloomberg machine and I would look at the news, see if there was any upgrades or downgrades. You know, I'd have all those symbols in. but they didn't move much. So it was just, you know, looking at the price levels or even some of my spreads or stocks, I don't get too volatile of stocks. I don't have to look at the news too much, but I have a news monitor and I have a CNBC in the background. But a lot of day traders, they don't even have the TV on. They don't read the Wall Street Journal. They're just watching their charts and they don't care what's going on in the world. And, you know, that could be done, but, you know, I have to be a little more knowledgeable. You know, I read the papers, and part of the reason I read the papers is I'm interested in the, you know, industries and companies in general, you know, in the trend. Gotcha. So sometimes the news is factored in. You can't always tell, like you read a story and, you know, sometimes you do the opposite of the story.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about like who should be going into this kind of field, who might thrive in it, who might not. How do you see it evolving? I mean, I know, and this is a field, and I made this point earlier with Patrick, the bond trader, is that, you know, it's technology has always been used in this field to get an edge. So how do you see it playing out here? Do you see a good future for this? Like, I would imagine there's going to be trading for people for as long as there are people.
Right. Well, the market is very efficient. And what I mean by that is it's just like a football game. You know, if the Patriots are playing the Jets, the Patriots are going to definitely win, right? But you probably are going to get a 1-5 payout, you know, or if it's by the spread, they have to win by more than 14 points. So now they may win, but maybe only 10. And it evens out. You see the experts, they're only 52 or 48 or 46. It's very hard to beat that. The same way in the stocks. And we're near the end of the year. You'll see like Money Magazine or, you know, they'll have their top 5-10 picks for the year. Or they'll look back on last year. And believe it or not, in general, they're not beating the market. And it's crazy because you think there's 5,000 stocks. Just give me the 10 best. It would seem to be so easy. But the good stocks, you know, it's already figured into the price. And the bad stocks, it's also. So it's almost like a coin flip. Although things do trend. Apple goes up over the years and Google and Facebook, you know, they might have a weaker time, but then they keep going up. And, you know, so some of the young people, they just, in some ways, they can outsmart the pros because they have no fear. And they just stay with these big stocks that are going up and staying with it and goes. Whereas a professional, it's like, well, this is overbought. And the PE on Palantir is like astronomical. It's not worth it. But so they may even be short something, but sometimes the retail people outsmart the traders. But the
institutional guys. But in terms of like AI and tech and things like this is like, are there going to be more opportunities for people? Are there going to be fewer opportunities for people? Like, what do you think?
Okay. Yeah. I know that was your question. So that's when I was saying the market is efficient and even more so. See, when I started trading was an eighth of a dollar. So you buy a stock is $50. The next thing is 50 and an eighth, which is like fractions. 12 cents. Then it became pennies. And once it became pennies, that's what started high frequency trading because they can cut in front of you by a penny. And, you know, so I'm waiting on a stock that's, let's say, thin. I'm bidding 50, waiting. All of a sudden, an order comes. Well, they cut in front of me 50 and a penny. And then they sell at 50 and you know, and there's high frequency firms that are trading just for a penny, believe it or not. And they're doing on 500, 400, 600 on so many shares and so many times throughout the day that they make millions of dollars. This one firm, Virtu, when they went public, they published, I think they had one losing day in like 5 years. That's incredible. Wow. Like, you know, independent traders happy to make one losing day a week, you know. So the market is becoming more efficient. All of these hedge funds, they have, you know, teams of PhDs in math and physics and crazy computational powers that keep things in line. So it's hard to find, you know, efficiencies. You know, there's no stock that's flashing. This is a buy. You know, when you think it is, it just keeps going lower. So it's very hard. But also sometimes a little guy can take advantage of places that like a thin stock where the big firm, they're not going to waste their time to just buy 1,000 shares of something. You know, they got to place millions. So sometimes a little guy can fit in there and, you know, get his little, 200 shares of this and it goes up and make. So what does the future hold? It's very efficient market. So it's hard to get an edge, you know, but there's always ways and there's always new things and, you know, costs have come down, commissions and whatnot. If you would have told me or anybody 20 years ago, there would be trading in pennies and no commission, you'd say, wow, you know, I'm not only going to live in Miami Beach, I'm going to own like a mile worth of beach, but like I say, the market has become more efficient. But one of the great things, if you want to be a doctor, you know, you have to go to medical school, you have to do all of that. A lawyer, you have to, you know, pass the bar and all that. But a trader, anybody could, you know, somebody could listen to this and log into Schwab or Fidelity, Robinhood, whatever, set up an account, wire over money from their bank, and maybe by Friday, they can push the buttons and go. And you could do it, you know, like, you know, I can't just say I want to be a golfer. I'm not that good a golfer. If they put me on a professional course, you have to clear some holes 280 yards over a lake just to keep it on the fairway. And I can never reach that. So my score is 2, 4, 8, 2, you know, like I would never hole out on that. You know, it's impossible. I can't, like, if you have a friend that does root canals, you can't take over his office while he's on vacation and do it, you know. But a trader, anybody thinks they can do it. So it's like an easy entry barrier. But
for can you for make people money? For people who want to, like, maybe work for an institution, and maybe not, like, they could be smaller banks. They don't have to be like the largest ones. But, like, are those opportunities going to be there the way they are now? Do you think there are going to be fewer opportunities? Do you have any, like, kind of crystal ball insight into the kind of world the kids are graduating into?
Yeah. Well, already, like, I read, and this is fascinating, like, a lot of the young people that get into investment banking, they help write out reports. There's what's called a 10K, where they put out...
that sounds rough.
Quarter, right? So guess what? They have AI, even a guy from was it Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, an AI in like an hour can whip up like 90% of that report that would take a team, you know, like a week or two to do. Numbers, charts, disclosures, information, just pull it from sources and put that out. So there might not be as much of a need.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a perfect application for AI. But in I'm thinking more like not on the investment banking side, I can see how there'd be like a lot of impact. But like on the actual equities, futures, and options trading side, do you think it will be impacted that much or not really? It seems like
it might morph into something different. And first in fintech, which is a term that's changing, there's, you know, with cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and, you know, look, there's no more pennies being issued. You know, things are electronic and there's trading of, now they have the prediction markets, right? You could bet on whatever, in the sports betting. And some of these are together in one account, right? So it's crazy what's going to be. So there'll be jobs and things in the industry probably that we don't imagine now, because there's always money moving around and money needing to be invested and money needing to be loaned and so on, and people willing to start businesses. You know, when, you know, earlier on when I said that I love the stock market, it's just fascinating that you can own a piece of whatever company you like. You like NVIDIA, you like Facebook, you know, you love going to Home Depot, you can buy a stock and
it is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like we take it for granted, but it is a little like, if you step back and think about it, it is like kind of a miracle that you're able to do that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And getting back to what is people who've had such faith in like a company like NVIDIA or Microsoft or Apple or whatever over the years, and they've held on through all of these things and it's stock splits and they get more shares and more shares. They've made millions of dollars just holding one, you know, 100, 200 shares from the beginning and holding it for years. And it's still the greatest way. And no matter what you think of this discussion or any discussion, you think the stock market is a scam or whatever, you know, trading, it still has gone up over the years. And anybody, you know, we don't know for sure if that's going to be in the future, but anybody who's had their money in a broad-based mutual fund or ETF or some stocks, it's been higher. It's been higher than real estate. It's been higher than anything. And that's helping Americans to retire and, you know, all kinds of things. So it's there. It's there. And independent traders are still going to be around. Might have to be a little different. But there's opportunities, you know, all the time. And, you know, I've taught some people. But, you know, and it doesn't have to be a full-time job. There's people who have a regular job. And maybe they trade for an hour or two in the morning. Or there's investing, which is not in and out as much. You know, check your stocks once in a while. And I know a lot of people, they have a regular job, but they says, oh, when Trump announced the tariffs and everything went down, I bought this, and the market rallied and they made some nice money just, you know, being alert for that on that particular day.
So Elliot, I know you have such a wealth of information and you love to like share it with people. Like, where can they find out what you're saying, what you're writing? Like, what's the best place to go for that?
Yeah, I'm not right now. Look for me on LinkedIn, Elliot Edelman. spelling is down there. Put in like Boca Raton or Seasoned Trader and you'll find me. I put a lot of content on there. I haven't really hit the Twitter or TikTok yet. I'm working on a book, so we'll see. So if you follow me there, you'll see, and you'll see what I'm up to next. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to maybe give anybody some advice or help.
Awesome. So Elliot, we'll have to have you back on when your book is published to talk about what it's like to be a writer. So everybody, thank you so much. Thank you, Elliot. If you enjoyed this episode, please like it and share it with your friends. And if you can, please be grateful for something today.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.